Welcome to the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation Podcast with Steve Warren and the coach, Greg Kennedy.
One. Shabbat to Kachuk, stays in the zone. Stutzla heads for the net. Shot! Score! Tim Stutzla wins it for Ottawa. 3-2 in overtime.
Welcome to the show. Here's what's happening in Sens Nation. It's the All-Star break, and the Sens go in with a loss to the Islanders and a nice win in Edmonton. We'll also talk about, well, we'll take stock of the first half. Pierre Dorion with State of the Union addresses all over the place. Gave an interview to Bruce Garriott and as well with TSN 1200. So we'll talk about some of the discussion that came from that and a whole lot more here on the Sens Nation podcast, brought to you by our friends at Jim K. Ford. Pleased as always to be joined by the coach, Greg Kennedy. How are things, Greg?
Things are very good, Steven. What a beautiful day it was yesterday. Not so much today. It was a gorgeous day yesterday. For one who's used to being in northern Alberta, it's been really nice here. I like Ottawa winters.
Yes, it's not the Caribbean, but it's still nicer than northern Alberta, I would say.
Most definitely. I laugh when I get these little things on my phone with a extreme weather warning coming up, because it's going to be minus 25 with wind chill of minus 30. And I'm like, okay, I was in minus 40 last winter. This is just fine. Thank
you. Yeah, not bad at all. All right, let's jump into things. And since we last got together, we've seen the Sens finish out with a 1-1 mark in their last two games. And they fell to the New York Islanders 4-1 on Tuesday. On Monday, though, they won in Edmonton 3-2 in overtime. And what a game for Tim Stutzla that night. An absolute beauty in overtime. A couple of great defensive plays. He got into a fight. It was all Stutzla all the time out on the prairie, wasn't it?
It was nice. It's just being in the middle of the ice, he has that much more space and that much more time. Although the goal came from off the wall. But throughout these games, over the course of 60 minutes, you see three or four times a game where he's got a little flash and he's got that extra little bit of space up the middle of the ice. And it's a sight to behold and something that Ottawa fans hopefully are going to get to see for many, many years to come.
The fight wasn't a legendary fight or anything like that. There were some Sens fans who applauded it, loved the kid was a gamer. There were other fans that said, no, we don't want to see you fighting. There's lots of guys in this team that can fight ahead of you. Just leave that to them. Which camp do you fall in?
Well, at first I'm thinking you don't need to fight. And then I'm thinking, you know what? Once or maybe twice, just to let people know that if you're going to push me around, I will fight if need be. There's nothing wrong with it from that sense. But you're moving forward, he probably doesn't need to fight again, at least for a long time now.
Yeah. I'd like to say give it a couple more years. He's still such a, you know, he entered the league right off the draft, right into the league, and he's still growing. I think he's still getting physically mature, and I think that I'd like to see him hold off and just let others handle it for now. And it wasn't just so much the fact that how you doing, you know, in the fists department. It was the takedown. If you look at that left knee of Tim Stutzla on the takedown, When I saw it initially, I was like, oh no, not another top six guy out of the lineup. But he came through it unscathed. Then he actually said it, you know, it was fun. So
they always clearly say that.
Yeah, clearly his roommate, Brady Tkachuk, is rubbing off on him, I think, a little bit.
And he did say that the cut, he was quick to say that the cut wasn't from any punch. The cut was apparently as he went down, but the cut came from the takedown. So he was quick to defend himself that he didn't quite get popped in the cheek there, like, or the eye area, like you would have thought in the fight.
That game was a pleasant surprise to me because, honestly, since the Sens had so recently beaten the Oilers, they scored five times in the third to come back and beat the Oilers a couple of weeks prior to the game. Then you factor in since that game, Batherson got hurt, Norris got hurt. The Oilers were on a four-game win streak. They seemed to be maybe turning a corner. I was worried about that game, maybe, you know, just potentially being a blowout in the other direction. But generally speaking, yeah, I mean, DJ Smith must have been absolutely thrilled with that performance. Now, a night later, they looked like they didn't have their legs and back-to-back. But if you look at that Oiler game, that's pretty good, pretty damn good performance, I thought.
Well, yeah, the secret weapon, Chris Tierney, potting a goal. Come on now.
That's right.
That's all it takes. Next man up, baby. Next man up. Chris Tierney's going to pot one or two. No, you're right. It was a really good game. Again, it was one of those games where, despite being at home, they approach it and play it like a road game. You know, let's get one if we can. Kitty bar the door. Get one when we need one. Again, the power play has problems, but that's mostly now due to a lack of personnel. But a good, solid, the 200-foot game, all those sort of cliches you want to use. What did Matt Murray call it? Senator hockey. They played Senator hockey for 60 minutes, or 63 minutes, I guess it was, and got 2 points.
Matt Murray was very good again, and it's funny that I'm even asking this question because you don't have to go back very many podcast episodes where I'm asking questions like, what's Matt Murray doing in there? Why is he down in the and now all of a sudden I'm clamoring to have him in the lineup. Like, how did we get there? Like, the last three games going into the All-Star break, you gave two of the starts to Anton Forsberg. Do you understand what DJ Smith is doing with his goaltending situation?
No, I couldn't figure that one out at all. We talked about this last show. I don't understand. He's hot. He's playing well now. Play him. It's okay. Yeah, there's a back-to-back. Well, can't we figure out that he plays the one before and the one after the back-to-back so he gets the two out of three? Why did they have to work it so that Forsberg got the two out of three? I give up trying to figure out some of DJ's personnel decisions, especially when it comes to goaltending and often when it comes to his defensemen.
Okay, so we are at the All-Star break right now, 40 games in, and normally we're at the stage where when we hit the All-Star break, it's kind of past the halfway point, but the Sens are a little behind the eight ball right now, schedule-wise. But it makes you want to call up Pierre Dorion, get a State of the Union address. It makes you want to take stock of the first half of the season. And while I feel better, I think Sens fans generally feel better about the last, I don't know, 15, 20 games or so. At the end of the day, when you look at things big picture, and this was Groundhog Day this week, it feels a bit Groundhog Day-ish. You look at the last 5 years, okay, go back 5 years. Seventh in the Atlantic, missed the playoffs. Then eighth in the Atlantic, missed the playoffs. Then seventh in the Atlantic, missed the playoffs. Sixth in the Atlantic, missed the playoffs. And we're here at the All-Star break right now, and the Sens are sixth in the Atlantic, 23 points out of a playoff spot. It does have a different feel right now, though, doesn't it? There does feel like there is hope that is not misplaced. It feels like it's about to turn a corner, does it not?
For sure. It is completely different from those other years because the dependence on, like, yes, they still depend on too few players to produce for them, but those players are young and those players are going to be here for a long time. That is the biggest difference. The biggest difference is you can now see a future. You can see guys like a team built around Tkachuk and Batherson and Norris and Shabbat and JBD, Sanderson. The list goes on. Stutzla, I don't think I mentioned him. These guys are here now. It's not older guys who are possibly disgruntled and wanting to leave. You're not going to be ending this season shipping guys out. You're going to be ending this season locking guys down. And that's the bright spot. That's what tells you that this is different.
On TSN 1200, GM Pierre Dorion had a lot to say, and he also gave an interview to Bruce Garriott and the Ottawa Sun. So we've sort of piled together point form notes on the things he had to say. But the one that kind of grabs me is the one that he laid down at TSN 1200. He said, I think we have most of the pieces for a cup contending team. What do you think of that pronouncement?
It depends on too many ifs, I think, right now. Like, is Josh Norris really a projected number one long-term centerman in this league? Is Drake Batherson really a 40-goal scorer moving forward in this league? Is Tim Stützle going to continue to move forward the way he has so far? That's the only questions. Those are the questions that I have. It's all based on projections. It's all based on where a guy's going to be 2-3 years from now for the unparalleled success years. I just finished talking about not having established veteran guys who maybe are unhappy, but you don't have any of those. You don't have any proven overtime successful hockey players here yet. So you really need those guys to project out to be what they are supposed to be. And then, yes, I can see where Pierre is coming from. If you're looking at it with rose-colored glasses, yeah, you got a lot of the pieces in place here.
Yeah, and that's what a GM is paid to do. It's all about projections because you're dealing with effectively an 18-year-old hockey lump of clay. A lot of things do have to fall into place, and that's the thing you just don't know. It looks like everything is on the right path, but who knows? I mean, Josh Norris looks like a can't-miss prospect. But when he's had two shoulder injuries, pretty big ones, and he's only 22, that always has something to worry. Some things are out of your control. And then you look at guys that like a Tim Stützle, we think he's going to be this, that he's going to be maybe a top scorer someday, but he hasn't done it yet. Until you do it consistently, then you just don't know. So it is, if everything goes the way that Pierre Dorion is hoping and projects, I think that's an accurate statement. But even a guy like Jake Sanderson, I saw somebody on Twitter doing a synopsis of what it'll look like salary cap wise in two, mm-hmm. 3 years. And they already had $8 million attached to Jake Sanderson. Hey, let's maybe wait and see if he makes the team. He sure looks like a hell of a prospect, but a lot of good things are going to have to happen.
Well, I think if you look at the Pierre McGuire 7-player profile, are they all here? And I'm sorry, but I don't see that number one stalwart win every night, give you a game every night goaltender there. That to me is the biggest projection of them all. Is it supposed to be Matt Murray? Is it like 4 years from now? Is Matt Murray going to be that? Because I'm not sure that it's Gustafson. I'm not sure that it's any of those other young goalies because we haven't seen them at all. I can understand thinking with Thomas Chabot, you've got that defenseman. And then really that kind of cancels out whether Sanderson works out or not. That sounds wrong, but you know what I'm saying. You've got the defenseman in Chabot. You've got a potential centerman there between Stützle and Norris. You've got the grinder guy, the power forward in Tkachuk. You've got the finisher in Batherson. You have, what's he called them, specialized forwards? PK or power play guys?
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact role he gives it. But between what Nick Paul is now, assuming he gets re-signed, what an Austin Watson can bring, what a Formanton brings on the PK, what down the road a Ridley Gregg can bring, that kind of checks that box, I guess. You know, but even going through this, it's all projection, right? But to me, the biggest one is that goaltending, and I'm from Missouri. Show me, baby. I haven't seen it yet that Matt Murray is the guy, and I haven't seen it yet that any of the other ones are the guy either down the road.
In reading Bruce's column, the big decision that has to be made in UFA is Anton Forsberg. And Dorion isn't sure yet if Philip Gustafson is ready to step in next year. Dorion's quote, "It's always based on performance. Gus last year until his last three starts was the guy that performed the best. I have not liked his last three starts with us. He's got to perform in Belleville and he'll have to perform in camp." I'm surprised, honestly, to hear Dorion sounding so skeptical about Gustafson. Not giving up on him, don't get me wrong, but there's some skepticism in that quote, which sounds surprising, given, again, he was, when you're looking bigger picture, Gustafson looked just fine. In fact, I thought he was their best goalie last year, and to the point where you're not asking him to be the number one because Matt Murray looks like he's going to be that guy. But Gustafson would seem like a good insurance policy, even if you have him in there as the backup. What do you think happens with Forsberg then? Does it sound to you like he might be back and be re-signed?
Yeah, like I've thought all along that Forsberg was the guy who should go and should go now while there's still possibly a market for him. But now I read that, and like I agree with what Pierre has said about Gustafson. I've said it to you. I haven't seen it yet. We need more out of him, and just like we talked about earlier, within the last 10 minutes here, it needs to happen consistently over a long period of time. And I'm not sure that Gustafson is that guy, and apparently neither is Pierre. But there's enough other guys that are potential to take that spot that, to me, Forsberg can go no matter what. But I guess they want to play it. I don't know. Is it some sort of coy thing there? Is he trying to get more value out of Forsberg? Is he trying to keep Gustafson from getting overconfident? Is there some other message in that line? I don't know.
The quote is this: that if we don't trade Anton Forsberg, it doesn't mean we're going to sign him or not re-sign him. It might be best, in fact, to keep Anton so that Phillip gets as many starts in Belleville as he can in the second half. So I'd agree with that. So I guess the idea would be Gustafson is that close, but he needs those extra starts in Belleville. So maybe we keep Forsberg around, even if it means we end up losing him and getting nothing in return.
And I don't have a problem with that. Like that doesn't that make sense to you too? If you're not sold on this piece over here, you want to get more performance out of it somewhere to continue to test it and evaluate it. And you have this piece right here in hand. Why not keep this piece that's here in hand and let that other one continue to develop and see what happens down the road? That makes sense too.
Indeed it does. And you know what else makes sense? Jim K. Ford. Especially if you're worried your vehicle might not make it through another winter. Maybe you're in the market for a certified pre-owned vehicle. Well, get to Jim K. Ford where they remove all the worries. With a 12-month, 20,000-kilometer limited warranty coverage, vehicle history report, purchase financing rates from 1.99%, 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. Check out jimkford.com, 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans.
The Jim K. Ford Sens Nation Podcast.
So Forsberg is one of several UFAs that they'll have to deal with at some point, either at the deadline or in the summer, or just say goodbye to. You got Forsberg, Tierney, Sanford, Paul, Ennis, Sabourin, Josh Brown. And obviously, in most cases, if you're going to be moving anybody, it'll be at the deadline in kind of that, you know, get what we can for these guys. Off they go in a rental for other teams. But when asked about that, Dorion did say, you know, I'm hearing from a couple of people that there's some hot, true hockey trades that are there to be made at the deadline. Do you buy that for this organization, or is that just a case of Pierre Dorion kind of casting his rod into the water?
Well, I think it would be very difficult. It's difficult enough to make a quote unquote real hockey trade these days. It would be even more difficult now because the number of players who don't want to come to Canada due to COVID restrictions. If I've got a wife and kids, I don't want to be traded to Canada. And if I do have a wife and kids, I want to get traded out of Canada. So that's going to be a problem. I think when it comes to no trade lists, I think, yes, Pierre may be right that there are going to be a number of real old-fashioned hockey trades made. I just don't think that Ottawa is going to be involved in any of them to any serious degree just because of the circumstances of the market and the COVID and the country and the all those other things that factor into it that always factored into being in Ottawa are still there, plus COVID. I can't see anybody making a quote-unquote true hockey trade with Ottawa right now.
It's not a coveted landing spot, let's say that, and I don't know if you've got it handy there, but you had texted me earlier a poll of NHL agents and where Ottawa falls on the list of would you recommend your player sign in Ottawa?
Well, essentially the question, the first question was, where would you, number one destination you would want a player to go or you would suggest a player go? They had 20 agents anonymously. And the question of what city would you recommend or not recommend, definitely not recommend that your player go to. And of course, Arizona was first and Ottawa with 11 of the 20 was second. Those were the only two markets with more than one vote. So you've got 11 out of 20 agents. Even if that's if you take that sample size out, that's over 50% of agents would tell their players not to come to Ottawa.
Right.
Oops.
Well, I mean, it's not just the way the club has been. I mean, I gave you the stats of the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. There's the ownership situation, the weather, the attention that the world has on the city of Ottawa when it comes to the NHL, like hockey name Canada. I mean, anytime you have the Sens. We're watching it on a Saturday night, but the Leafs and Habs are playing elsewhere. You see in the intermission what the Ottawa Senators mean nationally to the folks at Hockey Night in Canada, and that's not much. Of course, we love them here in this town desperately, but if you're not from Ottawa, you get into tax situations and all that. There's a lot of reasons why they wouldn't appear near the top of the list as coveted markets.
And the other one is the location of the arena. Eugene Melnick might not see it, but it's a factor. The fact that the arena is 25 kilometers away from downtown Ottawa is a factor. Not necessarily, well, obviously to fans, but also to players. The players and their wives and their families who want to appreciate what the city has to offer. And no offense to the citizens of Stittsville and Kanata, you're not exactly close to the heart of Ottawa when you live out there and you play and practice out there. That factors in too. And that the fact that the arena has not been built downtown, there's no plans for it, or it's been started and stopped and tried and scrapped and yada, yada, that factors into it as another negative against the owner. The article explained that a lot of these agents blame the arena situation on the owner. It's just one more nail in the coffin of the ownership group here in Ottawa.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say Eugene Melnyk didn't mind that Chicago Blackhawks story from yesterday, where you had owner Rocky Wirtz just lobbing grenades on himself at what was a team town hall. And usually there's fans and corporate sponsors and the media at those types of things. One reporter asked him how the team is improving moving forward so that future players who feel victimized feel empowered to come forward. And Rocky Wirtz basically had a tantrum and said, it's none of your business.
But here's the thing. This is a man who was hailed as a hero in Chicago. When Dollar Bill Wirtz, his father, died and Rocky took over, and Rocky made so many changes, brought in McCullough as the president and said, okay, let's modernize things. Let's become a real franchise. We're going to put the Hawks on TV. We're going to do all the right things here. And they became the model franchise of the league for how they run things, the coaching there, the players that went through there. And now Rocky's just, you know, they had an opportunity here to step up and answer some questions about the whole Chris Beach situation and basically told the guy to shut up. We're not talking about that. That's not the right way to go.
No, to say it's none of your business. I think it was Wayne Gretzky on TNT. He responded to that. It's like, well, if I have a son who just got drafted by the Chicago Blackhawks, that's not what I want to hear. I want to know he's going to be safe in that organization. And if something happens like that, the team will have his back. And then what's more, when you say none of your business to the media, which is a conduit to the fan base, well, you're asking the fans and the corporate sponsors that are at that town hall to line up and spend their money on this organization and align themselves with you. Saying none of your business, that's not the way to go. Anyway, we're not turning this into a Chicago Black. This is not Blackhawks Nation. So let's move on to something else. Pierre Dorion also talked about the injury factor. And the one that kind of grabbed me was Drake Batherson, 10 to 12 weeks. That sounds like there's a really good chance that guy might not be back this season at all. They say April, if that. So it's so bothersome that it happened. It just didn't need to happen. It was so unnecessary what Aaron Dell did. And effectively with his cheap shot, Rob sends fans of seeing a guy that might very well be this team's best player.
Yeah, it's terrible. Terrible news. They say the high ankle sprain, you might as well break the damn thing. So, okay, I read that and hear that every time. So, okay, if somebody gets a high ankle sprain, why doesn't the doctor just break it then? Okay, would that work? I'm just curious, you know, like, ooh, I got a high ankle sprain. Okay, quick, come here, son. I'm going to break that for you. You know, like maybe that's the way you're supposed to treat a high ankle sprain. Break it.
Probably not. I imagine the damage is done. So, but yeah, if you have a choice, that's what they say. Shane Pinto, they say he's going to be examined in mid-March, not back in mid-March. So he's got a long way to go just yet. Colin White is going to potentially return on February 26th. Connor Brown is he's going to be back for the next game. Looks like he's going to be back Monday against New Jersey. I can't imagine that jaw is fully healed. I would imagine he's probably going to wear a shield for a while. And then Josh Norris, that's the last one. He's got 3-4 weeks, they say. Although looking for a second opinion, which makes me a little nervous. What about you?
Yeah, but I don't mind. That is the player's right. They collectively bargained for such a thing. Let's face it. And I know one of the team doctors very well. Let's face it, though. The doctor is an employee of the team, and it's in the doctor's best interest. It's in the team's best interest to have the player playing. So if you're a team doctor who doesn't want the players to return, you're probably not the team doctor for long. So the players collectively bargained for the opportunity to go get second and third opinions, and that's now what they're allowed to do. So here's Josh Norris going to go get a second opinion. Nothing wrong with that.
No, and I think the Buffalo Sabres were a cautionary tale with the whole Jack Eichel thing, that maybe if the player wants to get his own second opinion, nobody in the world cares more about the player and his health than the player. And it's in their best interest, too, to get as healthy as possible. So you might as well let the player take his best shot at a second opinion and the best possible health care. So, yeah, Josh Norris, probably 3 or 4 weeks away. And, it'd be good to get him back in the lineup. So I think that's it for today. I don't think I have anything else, Greg, unless you had anything else on your agenda today here in Sens Nation.
Well, I started compiling my list of Sens Nation Spelling Bee.
Sens Nation Spelling Bee?
Yeah, you want to try some Sens Nation Spelling Bee?
Let's do three.
Okay, let's just do goaltenders then. We'll do three goaltenders. How's that?
All right.
Curtis McElhaney.
Ooh. M-C... I-L... H-E-N-Y?
Wow. Nowhere close.
Oh, dear. Go ahead.
M-C... You could put these... We could do this on YouTube, and you could put, like, the letters up on the screen for this one.
I like it. I like it.
M-C-E-L-H-I-N-N-E-Y.
Wow. I was way off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Next. Chris Drieger.
Chris Drieger. D-R-E-I-D... G-E-R?
Oh, you're so close. But it's actually I-E. D-R-I-E-D-G-E-R. So it's actually Drieger.
Okay. That's two. Yeah. 0 for 2.
0 for 2. And I don't think you're getting this one either, buddy.
All right.
You could probably guess who it's going to be. Peter Sidorkiewicz.
Okay. S-I-D-O-R-K...
Ooh, very good.
I-W-I-E-C-Z.
Oh, you just got the E in the wrong place. S-I-D-O-R-K-I-E-W-I-C-Z. Very close on Sidorkiewicz.
Yeah, all right. Well, 0 for 3.
Need some music. There's your first edition of Sens Nation Spelling Bee, the goaltender edition. Steve goes 0 for 3. Next time we'll be defenseman.
Yeah, a Curtis Lysician right out of the gate, I'm imagining.
Well, I wish they could Mark Borowiecki, but that's okay.
Oh, I can do that one right now, no problem at all. Borowiecki. Anyway, we'll call it quits right there. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, our website is SensNationHockey.com. We really appreciate you joining us. We'll be back on Monday with our next episode as we get ready for the second half of the Sens campaign and the charge to the playoffs, Greg. The charge to the playoffs. What do you need, like, to go 35-5 to finish the year? Anyway, we'll call it quits there. Thanks, Greg. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Bye now.
What's that, puberty?
Holy smokes.
Thanks for being with us on the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and review. Share the show with your friends and followers, or become a member on Patreon. Check out our website today at SensNationHockey.com.